Welcome back to another episode of the Bonsai Stuff Podcast. As always, me, Scott Martin from Bonsai Matsu. Thank you very much for listening in. I do appreciate it, as always. And what a busy time it's been lately for me. I love it. Had the Bonsai Open up at the Central Coast and then went further back south down to see Sydney City Bonsai Club and did a demonstration presentation there as well. So I want to talk about that through this podcast, plus what I believe to be the foundation of all good bonsai. And, you know, I met so many people and we talked about so much bonsai over the last couple of weeks that it's a common thread that I found that I was coming back to with talking to people. So I want to talk about the foundation of all solid good bonsai in my eyes anyway. So stick around, this should be interesting. Let's start with the Bonsai Open. What an amazing event. Seriously incredible. It blew my mind. The quality of the trees, the number of trees, the venue that had been organised by the Central Coast Bonsai Club that run this thing, they put it all together, do so much work in the background. When you head along to a show as a spectator, as a visitor, you can come along and see these beautiful trees on display, but the amount of work that goes into it from a club perspective and individuals working on their trees, it's years and years of dedicated work. But these events seem to come together, well, I'd say relatively seamlessly from the external. Internally, I'm sure there's been a lot of heartache along the way, and there was a near tragedy with someone dropping a tree or having it fall off a trolley on the way in, which got repaired in time for the show, luckily. But there's just so much that happens with these things that it's time to sort of say thank you to everyone involved, because my part, I loved it. I did some demonstrations on trees and made them look great and talked to people and talked about the whole world of bonsai as far as I see it. And the main winner was everyone that put trees on display, everyone that fronted up at all levels. You know, they have the typical club show where there's the novice, the intermediate and the advanced, and then there's another level, a platinum level inside the club. And then there was the open, which is where anybody could offer a tree up for consideration and pay the entry fee and then get your tree on display if it was deemed good enough. And it was lovely. It was such a nice setup, such a change from a lot of shows that I've been to where the trees didn't feel like they were jammed in. You know, it wasn't based on the volume of trees, even though there was a hell of a lot of trees in there. It really had that open, airy feel to it where you could walk around and people could stop and talk and catch up and discuss trees and just socialise in the display area without feeling like you were bumping shoulders as you're walking past people. And it was just had a lovely feel, lovely environment to it. And the quality of the trees were great. It's open to everybody around Australia, but clearly, you know, obviously not everyone makes the trip. It's a long way to go from different parts of the country to get there, and whether you can actually do that and get your trees back home safely without being locked up in quarantine is another thing entirely. But overall, the show itself, I think, has got such merit, and the prize money, the carrot to enter trees into the show with the potential of winning, you know, one of the many different categories that could win, was obviously well taken up by a lot of people, because there was a lot of trees. And part of my work there too was judging, and there was a last minute sort of change with things, and I had to end up judging with someone else. There was two of us, independent of each other, and we had to judge the best in show and scale everything. But I just wanted to run through, I suppose, the judging process, because you've always got to do your first show. You've always got to put yourself out there and put a tree on the line. And I just want to talk, I suppose, about what someone that's judging looks for when they're considering the trees. And there's a few simple categories. So as you're working on your trees, whether they're going into a show or just been in a show, or there's a show coming up next year, or you want to consider yourself for the Open when it runs in 2025, which would be awesome for a lot of people, because some beautiful trees that should get up there. But some of the considerations are, as a judge, you're asked to go and score things out of 10 or out of 20. So you don't necessarily walk through a show where there's, you know, hundreds of trees and just go, oh, that one there, that's the winner. Yep, give it the ribbon. Good on you. Thanks very much. And because there's two judges scoring independently of each other, then there's no collaboration as to which tree or display is the best. So it's really, you don't know the winner, or you don't know who's got the chocolates until you actually walk in the next day, which was me. Like, we judged on the Friday night till very late in the night. Then on the Saturday morning, I walked in there and said, "Who got it? Which trees? Like, what was the ranking?" Because you don't know. You just put all your scores together, and from your own, you can see who sort of ranks higher and who doesn't. So you can sort of get a feel for them. But then it's when the scores are combined and two independent judges that look at trees very differently, which is fantastic, I reckon. You know, you could probably even have it where there was three judges. Any more than that might get a bit. Sort of spread, but it definitely gives you a nice rounded feel to the winners when they take it out, because it's not necessarily, you know, whoever wins may not be, you know, your personal preference for what you think was best, but overall, and it's really nice when it comes together like that, and you can sort of go, oh, that's a great tree. Yeah, that I'm glad that one picked up this, or that display there, that's brilliant. I'm wrapped that it's taken out the chocolates for the first in, you know, best in show. So the things that get looked at from a judge's perspective with any show, well, they should anyway, in my category, in my mind, and it's something that I've always done. These guys had it broken down on a score sheet, which was great, but you look at things like the first category was the trunk and the bari. So you'd isolate, you put on your blinkers and you're just looking closely at that part of the tree, and you go, okay, well, for me, it's either, you know, it's fantastic or it's not. And some trees, like, you know, you may get species like a juniper, where then a bari may not necessarily be killer. It might not be brilliant at all. So it might score low on the nabari side, but on the trunk side, you know, with twists and turns and deadwood and all the rest of it that fall into that category for that species, it might score quite high. Whereas other trees, you know, say a Banksia that's got a massive nabari on it or something like that, might score exceptionally well in that category. So that's one thing you've got to look at. That's the first category. The second was the branching structure and ramification. And while you might have younger varieties or younger trees that may have really nice primary branching, secondary might be starting to come along, they might not have that fine ramification. So you've got to take into consideration, okay, the primary branching, and then what about the ramification? And so some trees that maybe, you know, didn't do quite so well with, say, a big or a trunk that's imposing and a beautiful nabari, doesn't need to be big, it's just got to be imposing, they might have really high ramification because they've been developed for so many years that there's that fine twiggy branching. So that'll do really well in that category. The next was the pot combination with the tree was, you know, in your opinion, as the independent person looking at it, how did you think the combination worked between the pot and the tree itself? And then you give that a score. And sometimes, you know, you'd look at it and go, oh, it's a magnificent tree, it's got beautiful branching, but the pots, you know, maybe it's too big, or maybe it's not high enough quality, or maybe the pot that's been chosen doesn't do anything to sort of accentuate the tree itself. So therefore it might not score quite as well. Or you might find that it's a bloody magnificent pot, but, you know, something else might be lacking in that department. You know, the pot might be brilliant. It might really suit the species and the colour of foliage, but then the trunk combo with the pot, you know, might not work quite so well. So they're really, it comes down to the individual that's looking at the tree and how they judge or how they perceive or put it together as to how that sort of combines really well together. And the last part was the overall display, which was a bigger score. Because it's, you know, it's the stand back moment. You sort of go back a couple of meters, you look at the accent, you look at the display, you look at how it's all been presented. How does that part work? And sometimes, you know, you might have a magnificent tree, you might have a magnificent pot with beautiful ramification, but then the overall display, you know, it might be might be lacking an accent, or it might, you know, what's there might not really work together, and that's where that judging part comes into it, and that's where you're not really led to know the overall winner for the show based on your own experience or based on your own judging, because when you step back and look, it's a real that's your perception, and you might look at the tree and everybody might look at it and go, magnificent, love it, fantastic. Pot, yep, beautiful pot, love the pot. How's the ramification? Yep, no doubt, that's absolutely brilliant. But then the step back moment where you look at the overall display and say, how was the display? How was it presented? You know, was everything done right? Was everything perfect? Like, and that's the part that sits back and, you know, I might say, fantastic, 100%. That's as good as it gets. And someone else might look at it and go, yeah, it doesn't do much for me. You know, I don't like the tray that's been used for the accent, or I don't like, you know, this, or I don't like that, or whatever it is. And that's the part where that independence of those two scores, well, I found anyway, that the independence of those two scores coming together to combine to create an overall impression of the winner. It's not just, okay, how did Scott see this show, and how did Scott rate it, and what does Scott think about who's best in show? It's like, that's rubbish. It shouldn't be based on what I think. I think it should be that combined. Okay, so if I take that person's approach plus that person there and we put them together, who comes out on top? And it's like, that's where it's not a lottery position, but it's definitely something where you get that independence of approach. And I know Clinton Esky and I were the judges, and we looked at trees very differently, and we talked about them differently, and what we liked about them and what we didn't like, or what could be improved, or what could, you know, be made a little bit better with the display, or what we loved about the display, or the part that really made us stand back and go, wow. That was always slightly different, and I didn't take any offense with that. I reckon that's perfect, and anyone that's organizing any kind of show with a judging panel, and especially when there's, you know, there's a fair amount of money involved in these things, I take it very seriously, and there's no rushing the judging side of things. And, you know, you come to the judging, I didn't have anything to do with the novice or the intermediate sections, but I loved it going through that the next day, completely independent, and looking at each of the trees going, I love that part. Oh, that's so cool. I can see where they're going with that. And look at the skill this person's developing. And, you know, really these trees are on a very good path, that in a few years' time, when they go through these different levels of novice and intermediate and advanced and whatever, and they get to that point where they can jump up to potentially go into the open if the people want them to, or compete at that level. It was really nice to look at them independently and then look back at the awards and go, oh, wow, okay, yeah, that one won. I can see why that's won. And that one came second, and that one came third, and this one got the People's Choice, and I can see why that's been chosen. And I loved it. I think the whole event, like I said, my demos, I really enjoyed. Did four flat-out demos over the 2 days, which was brilliant. Got to meet a hell of a lot of people. And if you did come up and say hello to me and you do listen to this podcast, thank you to each and every one of you, because it's really warms the cockles of my heart to know that the podcast means so much to so many, and for you to come in and say g'day to me, then that really meant a lot. Okay, so after the open, I had a gig to go to down at Sydney City Bonsai Club. So thank you guys, because I know there's some listeners that tune into the podcast. Thank you very much for having me. In between, I got to go to a place called Crescent Head, which is, if you're a surfer, for me, it's a place that's very, very near and dear to my heart. And got to go and catch a few special waves up there, which was brilliant in between. So bonsai and surfing for me. Life doesn't get much better, I can tell you. So then Sydney City, it was a different demo completely, and I wanted to bring that up because it was one of those events where it was a small, intimate group of people. You know, I think there was about 20 or 30 people there. So it wasn't massive. It was really nice, and everyone's really keen, and it's such a lovely club, and there was a range of different trees there that were put up on for me to do a 3 hours to work on I don't know, I think it worked out being about half a dozen trees. So it was pretty fast and furious, I can tell you. But I loved it because we got to talk about things like flow, visual weight, movement of the tree, all that sort of stuff. But it also meant that the trees, a lot of them were black pines, almost all of them were black pines, I think. And we could work on them and create some or take some very serious steps forward for these trees that possibly a few of them hadn't been as well looked after as what they could have. A few were with people that wanted some different direction that were really healthy trees. So it was great to go through a range of different trees and say, all right, let's talk about where's this tree going? What's, you know, the foliage is sticking out here and here. Let's look at bringing that back in. Let's do this. Let's do that. And I really enjoyed that because it was one of those interactive moments where you got to do something and, you know, it was major. I think the main thing that sticks in my head was some major branch bending, bringing out the steel Rio bar that I love that travels with me around the countryside and around the world, to be honest. Get that out and actually get people up close and personal to see how these things are done, to learn the techniques, to then take them on board and use them however they're going to use them somewhere in their own world of bonsai. And I loved it. For me, I walked out of that demo feeling absolutely a million bucks, exhausted because a lot of work had to get done in a really short period of time. But when you get that interaction, when people get involved and they want to buy into what it is that you're doing, it felt really personal. It felt really, really good. So I loved it. And like I said, the people that were at the at that demo, a lot of them have travelled. You know, some were at the Bonsai Open as well and travelled up north. Then they came to see me on a Saturday afternoon in Marrickville. So it was great. I just want to do a bit of a quick shout out to the club because thank you for having me, and it was an amazing time for me, and I really felt like I got a hell of a lot out of it. To be honest, it was great. So on my travels recently, I got asked a couple of things. One of them was about merch. I seem to get asked about the merch a little bit, which is really nice. And I had, prior to even leaving, I've organised a heap of T-shirts to get made with just the Bonsai Matsu tree on it. No labelling, no branding, no nothing like that. So I should have those coming on board hopefully any day now. They were ordered a while ago, so they should be here any day. And I've decided that I'm going to look to give these things away to people that sign up to do the intensives courses with me. There's a bit of a thank you, a bit of a you know, you're part of it now. Let's celebrate with a free T-shirt. So you should see some stuff coming out with a really nice basic Bonsai T-shirt without branding all over it, because that's not my thing to push my wheelbarrow like that. But you know, that's coming up, so you should be able to see those. So if you're interested in getting one, jump on board to the intensives and come and spend a weekend with me, and we'll get through a lot of stuff. The other thing was subscribers. I've talked about subscribers before, and I just wanted to say thank you again to everybody. I did get asked a lot about it because it seems it's a bit complex signing up for being a subscriber. In the show notes, wherever you listen to your podcast, you should be able to go into the show notes, and there's a link at the bottom. From as little as $3 a month, you can subscribe to the show, which means a hell of a lot. It really does, and it keeps it rolling with the frequency that it's coming out with now, and the gusto that it's coming out with. So, if you're teetering on the edge of becoming a subscriber, please do. It would mean a hell of a lot to me. It means a hell of a lot to this show. So, thank you very much. If you do, I would greatly appreciate it. All right. So now, on to the next section for the podcast. I want to talk about the foundation of all good bonsai. So part of the demo that I did at Sydney City that I just talked about, there was a few trees there that had been in a collection that maybe hadn't been looked after in recent times, possibly as well as what they could have been. They're loved, well-loved trees, but they hadn't been repotted for a long time. Things were struggling and they got beyond someone's control. So the idea was bring them in, do a demo, learn from them, shape them, and then I think that they get to move on and be sold at some point down the track as the health improves on these things. So that was one point. Now, I had other people come and talk to me at the Open talking about trees that were maybe struggling, got to see a lot of photos of people's collection saying, hey, what do you think? And I seem to swing back to the same thing a hell of a lot when I talk to people about the strength of their tree and where the good foundation comes from, where it all stems from. And it's from the root system of the tree. If you've got a tree that is struggling, you know, and when I say struggling, you can see when trees start to struggle a lot of different ways. It can be foliage discoloration, it can be pest infestation, it can be fungal issues, it can be drooping foliage, it can be so many different things. It can be burnt tips of needles, it can be, you know, when needles start to drop off the tree, not just because they're old, but because there's something going wrong. And a lot of times, you know, my approach with it, which I don't shy away from, is I'll always treat the issue that I've got in front of me however the best possible means that I can do and however I want to do. There's the natural remedies, there's the chemical-based remedies. Whatever it is that you choose to do, do something to try and fix or stop any further damage happening from that point. But I'd almost guarantee you that as you work your way back down the tree, and if you try and work backwards and say, okay, well, this is what's happening now, why is that happening? All right, so that's happening because of this. All right, why is that happening? You know, let's pick one. Coming out of summer, and if you're over in the west of Australia, then I don't think summer's stopped for the last 6 months, and it doesn't look like it's going to either. We're in Melbourne, it's, you know, we got nice colour on our deciduous trees at the moment. It's all starting to look good over here because we've got our colder temperatures, the rain's kicking in and our overnight lows are dropping significantly. Must admit, when I was up the New South Wales coast in the camper van, and you get up in the morning and it was beautiful blue skies and sunshine and mid-20s expected for the day, I did wonder, why do I live in Melbourne where it's raining and it's cold? But anyway, so if you're looking at, say, something like leaf burn on your trees, that then maybe leads to dieback of some of the fine branching. You know, that's a realistic thing that would have been experienced by a few people. You sort of start working your way backwards along there going, well, okay, the tree's not getting enough water. And that's, you know, that's really something that is so easy to broad brush statement. You know, oh, the tree's not getting enough water, it's getting too much water. Okay, so, all right, too much water, don't water as much. Is that fixing the problem? No, it's not. It's just delaying the inevitable. It just means that your soil mix is really boggy and it's holding too much water, more water than what the tree can take up. All right, so it's not getting enough water. What do you do? You can sort of aerate it a little bit, you know, with a screwdriver or a chopstick or whatever it is, just to let some more water into that root ball. You can scrape off the soil surface a little bit to take away some of the hardened parts and then let the water permeate through the rest of it. You can put it in a bucket to hydrate all the particles. You know, there's so much you can do with it. But the ultimate comes down to there's an issue with the root ball on the tree, whether it's too compact, you've got the wrong medium being used for your environment, or the tree, you know, it all comes back to this issue with the root system. If you can, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, and you'll hear it almost through every single podcast that, or every time that I talk about something, or you see me doing a demonstration, whatever it is, I'll always come back to saying, if you focus for a little while on the root system of the tree and don't focus on the top part of the tree, get the root system right first. Make that, you know, rule number one, get the root system right first. Then I guarantee you that the rest of the tree will develop nice and easily. It'll branch out. It'll backbud. You'll get good growth on it. You'll get really healthy foliage. You know, the thing will take off and develop at a rate so much better than if you leave the root system and go, no, I'm not going to repot it this year, or I'm worried, or I might slip pot it. Slip potting for me is a really temporary measure. It might be that, you know, you look at a root system that's too wet at the moment. You know, we're going into mid to late autumn now. So it's definitely not the time for me to be repotting. If you choose to, that's on you. For me, I definitely wouldn't be repotting at this time of the year. But slip potting is one of those things that I think is something that we can do for a soil that is, or a root system that is way too wet. Take it out of the pot, put down a big layer of, you know, really good scoria at the bottom, put the root ball without disturbing it into the middle of a larger pot, like say an orchid pot or something like that, secure the tree in there, then put scoria right the way around the root system as well, and then up over, a little bit up over the root mound as well. So all I'm trying to do is have it so that water can drain away better. That's my only thought when I'm thinking about slip potting. I'm not thinking about new root growth, because I've got a root ball which is really compacted and not doing very well at all. That's not letting the roots breathe. That's staying nice and dense like a brick, effectively. That's, you know, that's too wet. That's really boggy. So what I want to do is I don't want to have the root system grow beyond where the pot is that suits the tree. So if I just have that water drain away and then I get to my repotting time, you know, be it, you know, late winter, early spring, I get in there, I start to free up that root ball that's too compacted, or, you know, by then if it's, you know, if it's soggy wet and the root system hasn't really grown well, you know, I can break it apart a little bit, get rid of some of that heavy organic mix, and then start to put in some more, you know, scoria pumice-based medium, which is my preference to use. And I can open it up a little bit more, then I know that the next growing season that I have, the next spring that I have, can really put me on a good path before I get into the next round of summer, which is my concern. My concern isn't spring, because I know that I'll get good growth in spring. My concern, hopefully I get good growth in spring with the right conditions and fertilizing and watering and all that sort of stuff. So I want to get to the point where I know that when summer comes around, if leaf burn was my issue and the dieback that was caused by it, and it all came from that root system not being good enough, then if I can improve it, get into a good mix and get that good solid root growth come through the spring season, then I know that I can manage it properly and the tree will come out the other side of summer and be a lot healthier and happier than what it was the previous summer. To get the root growth, you know, I know that in the back of my head, if I've lost ramification, if I've lost structure on the tree, then I'm not necessarily going to be thinking, okay, grow and pinch. You know, I don't want that root system to only grow a little bit. I want the root system to grow a hell of a lot. So if I get to spring on this tree, then I let the foliage grow at a rapid rate, get rapid root growth with it as well, and then just prior to summer, get back in there and give it a nice haircut and remove a lot of that foliage back again, then I know the root system is going to be able to handle what's coming up from a transpiration point of view through the summer period. So you look at things like fertilizing at the moment in autumn. It's a great time for me to fertilize the hell out of my trees, really pump in the fertilizer to make sure that things are as strong as they possibly can be as they head towards the dormancy period. So taking it in, building the tree's strength, get through dormancy, spring comes around, release all that. If your root system's no good, then heck, it doesn't matter how much fertilizer you're putting on there. You can load up that tree to as much as it'll fit on the pot, but if the root system can't take it up, then you're just wasting your time. So you've got to be mindful that everything from your trees, from your bonsai's perspective, all comes from the ability for those roots to do their job and having enough roots in that system to manage the foliage that you've got above. You can't have, you know, I'll simplify it, you can't have a million branches if you don't have a million roots. You know, you need to, if you've got, you know, a handful of decent roots in that root system, then I guarantee you're going to have a handful of decent branches above the soil surface anyway. You've got to make sure that you're focusing on that. So anyway, I don't want to bang on about it. If you see that your trees struggle to take a step forward as you're heading towards this winter, this dormancy period, and especially the deciduous trees that lose their leaves and you can see that structure a little bit better, you know, if you look at it and go, well, really, it hasn't done much. And if you look at photos this year to last year and go, wow, you know, step forward, step back, I'm where I was, then my suggestion would be now's the time to really look at that root system, do a review of it and say, is that as good as it possibly can be? And be honest. Like, seriously, just don't fluff around with it. Be honest with yourself and say, is it really at the point where it's at fighting grade to do the best it possibly can be for this tree? And if it's not, then we're coming up to a time where you can actually do something about it as we head towards repotting season. That's it, folks. Thanks for listening. Just want to get through, I suppose, that as I was rereading my notes for the foundation of good bonsai, that, well, you know, all of your development plans that you've got only work if your bonsai is strong. So focus number one, strength of your tree. If you get that right, the rest of it will fall into place sooner or later. And don't stress too much about the design side of it. Let that come naturally over time. You know, that's something that builds up. So anyway, bonsai open, any bonsai show, any chance that you get to be involved with a bonsai show where you can put something up on display, you should do it. You should make it that you take your trees that step forward, because your focus is very different when you're putting a tree on display as opposed to you're looking at it in the backyard. And make sure there's no weeds in the trees that go on display. That's a big no-no. Anyway, thanks for listening in. As always, I love the patronage. I love you all. Reach out if you need any help with anything, scott@bonsaimatsu.com or through the socials, Instagram or Facebook, whatever it is. I'm always here to help. Until next time, happy bonsai.